hip.
You're listening to Sailing Chicks with Nicks on Radio Northern Beaches, 88.7, 90.3 FM, and you can stream us on rmb.org.au. A couple of weeks ago, I got the opportunity to sit down for a one-on-one chat with Jimmy Spithill, the skipper of Oracle Team USA. Joining us this morning on the show, Sailing Chicks with Nicks, Radio Northern Beaches, he's the youngest helmsman ever of an America's Cup boat. He was the youngest helm ever to win an America's Cup. He's an Australian sporting legend and a guy that simply just loves to send it on a boat, Mr. James Spithill. Jimmy, mate, how are you?
Good, thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're pretty excited to have you. We've been trying to chase you down, but you're a very busy man.
Yeah, sorry about all the mess around with the schedule. And also, you know, I think it's fantastic that you guys have got this show up and running. I mean, I think if you look at the success that Australian sailors are having in general, but not just in the Cup and in the Olympics. You look at where a lot of the medals came from, and they came from sailing. So I just hope this and a whole lot of other things will help re-spark that sort of interest and get sailing into the limelight and mainstream in Australia.
It certainly has been an enormous year for sailing in Australia. We've seen such a boost after the Olympics. How's it been for you personally?
Yeah, well, it's been, you know, pretty big for us. I mean, obviously, with the victory in the Cup a couple of years ago, we've been just flat out, really, working at Oracle Team USA here on our defence. But having said that, we have gone out, and I've gone out and hired a couple of Australians, namely Tom Slingsby, who was, I think, Australia's only individual gold medalist out of all the sports. Now, don't quote me on that, but I think that's true.
We'll go with it anyway.
We'll run with it anyway, that's right, typical Aussie way. And, yeah, I mean, look, we've got a fantastic team here. We've got a lot of nationalities, but certainly when you look around a lot of the Cup teams, there is one common theme. There are a lot of Australians. And I'm not just talking the sailing teams. I'm talking design, engineering, shore, boat building. There really is a lot of talent from Australia, which, you know, I guess is exciting as a, you know, to see.
Yeah.
You know, I guess our lifestyle really produces that.
There certainly is. Where did you start? How did you get into sailing? It's always been in your blood, but how did the journey take you to where you are today?
Well, I grew up in Alvina Bay, and which is just next to Scotland Island there, so you have to go to school by boat. It's on the water, it's in the bush, and there's no roads.
Incredibly so tough for you then.
So we had to go to school by boat. We're forced into it. But also, as a kid, I used to work at Beachel's boatyard when I was a kid. And obviously with Australia 2 winning, that became my dream. And from there, I guess I started racing when I was about 12. I windsurfed when I was about 4 or 5, and I just did it for fun. Mm. But really didn't get into racing, I think, in Manly Juniors until I was about 12.
And it kind of all went from there. What was the first event you remember winning?
I don't know. I actually remember the first race that my sister and I ever raced in our Manly Junior. It was the old wooden Manly Junior, and I think we won it, you know. We were used to just sort of sailing around on our own, and it was a race that was very, very windy, you know, and I didn't really know the course, but we just sort of sailed around, and next thing you know, a gun went off.
you are racing.
We had no idea, yeah, and then we just sort of sailed home, because that's what we do. But, you know, I think all in all, it was probably the biggest opportunity came through Sid Fisher.
Mm.
And, you know, I met him at the Yachting Awards and asked him one night if I think I won the Youth Award, he won the Ocean Racing of the Year Award, and just really asked him, hey, I'd love to come out and see what the ocean racing's like. And he basically said, well, what are you doing tomorrow? And that sort of started a long relationship and a lot of opportunities for me and a lot of other young guys.
Yeah, and that obviously led you to be involved in Young Australia Campaign, where you were the youngest helmsman ever on an America's Cup boat. Only 19, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
How was that experience?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, it was a lot of work. It was a big ask. I mean, we had the oldest boat there. It was basically a boat from 1995 that was called Sydney 95. And that boat and that America's Cup came dead last. So it wasn't known for its performance. and we were racing in 2000, you know, so quite a lot of change then.
Mm.
But the fact was, it was an incredible opportunity for the young sailors, and a lot of older people wrote us off, you know. It was interesting that a lot of, you know, we approached a few, you know, experienced guys to come and help us, and some of them just didn't want to be involved. But we got over there, we had very minimal time, we trained up a team, and we beat a Swiss team led by Jochen Schumann, you know, a triple gold medalist. They built a brand
very
new
impressive.
Boat. And we also embarrassed a lot of people out there, you know. We were leading a lot of races, you know. We'd get off the start line well, and then usually a gear failure or something would drop us back. But it really, you know, put people, a lot of these guys, out into the spotlight and gave them a stepping stone from then going forward. And what was always, you know, kind of, you know, funny for me was a lot of these guys that said no, they didn't want to be involved, but then later on asking for a job, you know, somewhere down the road.
Well, you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. The bottom of your glass, hoping one day you'll make a dream last. But dreams come slow and they go so fast. You see it when you close your eyes. Maybe one day you'll understand why everything you touch surely dies. But you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. Staring at the ceiling in the dark. Same old empty feeling in your heart. Cause love comes slow and it goes so far. Well, you see her when you fall asleep, but never to touch and never to keep. Cause you loved her too much and you dive too deep. Well, you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. Burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go.
You're listening to Sailing Chicks with Nicks on Radio Northern Beaches as I chat to Jimmy Spithill, skipper of Oracle Team USA. Further into your career in the America's Cup, which ultimately led you to winning the America's Cup there in 2010, the 33rd Cup for Oracle. On that 90-foot trimaran, how was the experience with the try, first of all?
It was a handful, that boat. It really was a... logistically, it was very, very tough. I mean, just for instance, the wing that was on that trimaran, it's the biggest wing ever built in the world, and that includes the aerospace, airline industry. The engineering was, we were breaking new technology, doing something that had never been done in the world.
It was revolutionary technology, and I'm correct in knowing that is larger than an A380 wing or a 747?
Correct, yeah.
So it's massive.
So even design and draw it and build it was a big task in itself, and a big call to pull the trigger to do something like that.
It would have been incredible.
Think how you're going to sail with the thing, or put it on a boat, or deal with it.
When they first approached you with the concept of a wing, what were your initial thoughts? Did you think they were crazy?
Well, yeah, Mike Drummond, our design coordinator at the time, he was the one that suggested it. He and I and a few others had done a little bit of sailing with an A-class wing and then a C-class catamaran that also sails with a wing. So we got some experience there, and as soon as we started sailing these little boats with the wings, we knew it was that we had to do it. And it was almost a no-brainer. I mean, the biggest thing was probably just, could we physically put the wing on the boat? Because the biggest challenge of these wings is they're always reducing thrust. So if you just have a little bit of wind, trying to use two huge hydraulic cranes to lift it up, put it on the boat, once it's in the boat, it's ready to go. It's not like a sail, you just pull it down. Once that wing's on the boat, it just constantly, it's like a wild animal in a cage. It just does not want to sit still.
So with the wing, I remember being out on the water there in Valencia the first day I saw you guys out there, and I don't think there was any breeze, and you could still see that this try was just ready to go in about 2 knots of breeze.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing. I mean, the power that you can produce out of these wings. I mean, just a simple comparison is that if you have a wing and, say, a soft sail, conventional mainsail, and they're exact same planform area, well, the wing would produce more than 2.5 times the power, or what we call lift coefficient. Mm. So they're incredibly powerful, yet they're perfectly aerodynamic. They never, ever flap like a conventional sail, and you can get them into the perfect shape. So they really are a huge, huge boost in performance. The only downside is really what I was talking about before, and that is logistically, or if you get into trouble. I mean, if you get into a lot of wind or a condition where it's becoming too much, you've got to ride it out, and that you just can't simply just pull the sail down.
Yeah, it's overpowered. Now, am I correct in knowing that you learnt to fly because of the wing, or did you already fly before?
No, as soon as we basically pulled the trigger on the wing, I remember we had like a 2 or 3 week break, and I just thought, well, look, the best way to learn about wings and aerodynamics would be to get a pilot's license. So I went down to Australia, and at that time we were based in San Diego with the trimaran. So I went down to Australia, and I did my pilot's license in 2 weeks down at Warner Vale Air, which is a little sort of almost like a country-style airstrip. And it was just fantastic. I mean, it was almost too much to try and pull it off in 2 weeks because I sort of had to do it every day and quite long days. But I was lucky because there were three great chief flying instructors there who had an interest in sailing, understood what I was trying to do, and it was just a fantastic time. And I actually became really good mates with them, and more so, I got hooked on flying. There it is, amazing how many people in the America's Cup fly, and how many similarities there are between flying and sailing.
And you've just been flying recently this weekend, I believe.
Yeah, just did a little flying with a mate. And I don't do as much as I'd like anymore. I mean, it's just to find the time, it's very difficult to kind of do everything. But I was lucky enough to go up in an FA-18 Hornet, which was quite cool, not too long ago, with this stunt group over here in the States called the Blue Angels. And then recently with Red Bull, they've got some pretty cool toys as well. So... yeah, I quite enjoy getting up in the air, although my racing experience in the F-18, I do have to admit I've brought my breakfast up a couple of times.
I'm not surprised at that. Now, with the obviously the trimaran, it took you to winning the 33rd America's Cup. How was that feeling, honestly? How did you feel when you crossed the finish line and you just knew you'd taken that out?
I think the first feeling was just relief. It's just to keep that boat in one piece during each day in the ocean was incredibly tough. I mean, you know, for instance, when we'd leave the dock, it was about, you know, 6:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock to get out to the course. And from then, you're on. I mean, because the boat just constantly is powered up and wants to sail, where, you know, Lingi, they didn't have to pull their sails up, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just an incredibly long day. You go from sunrise to sunset and you're mentally on, just trying to keep this boat together.
And of course, in extreme conditions, I remember it was extremely cold out there on the water in Valencia, and I remember you sort of telling me stories about how you were trying to keep yourself warm.
Yeah, well, that's right. But interestingly enough, like, both these boats had engines to power the winches.
Mm.
And, you know, when we were sitting around in between races, it was almost an on... It was almost like an on-field brawl to try and get down into the engine room, you know, to go and check on the engine, so to speak.
Warm yourself up a little bit.
Warm. But, no, look, it was... every day we'd sail that boat, we would have an issue leading up to the race. Every single day. So those two races that we sailed were the only 2 days we ever sailed that boat where we didn't have an issue.
Wow.
It was just such a handful, and it's just really very, very draining just to be on and sailing that boat.
Well, you got through it, and you took out the America's Cup, which is incredibly impressive. And we were all very proud of you as Australians.
Yeah, it was a great... I'll tell you what, it was such a big team effort, and probably the best part of that whole experience was, you know, it was great because Larry was on the boat and seeing the other guys on the boat, but the real satisfaction came when we got back and we got to see all our teammates, you know, and just to see how happy they were, because that, you know, they're the ones that get you there, and they're the ones that kept us out there in one piece, and they put in all the blood, sweat and tears, yet they don't get the reward, I guess, of sailing a boat like that.
And it's something that you take for everybody, is you win that event, you won that cup for your whole team.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best, you can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world, you can beat the war, you can talk the guy, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock, you can move a mountain, you can break rocks. You can be a master, don't wait for luck, dedicate yourself and you can find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame.
You can run the mile, you can walk straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold, breaking all the records they thought never could be broke. Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. Are you ever gonna know if you never even try? Do it for your country, do it for your name, cause there's gonna be a day when you're
standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name.
You can be the king, come banging on your chest. You can be a general.
Hi, this is Jimmy Spithill from Oracle Team USA, and you're listening to Sailing Chicks with Nicks.
A lot of people don't understand the enormity of the size of America's Cup teams and the amount of people and the work that goes into it. So how many have you got there at Oracle in San Francisco?
We've got just over 110 in San Francisco, and we've actually got a build team down in New Zealand as well, where we build a lot of our componentry. So it's a huge team effort. I mean, it really is comparable to Formula One, where there is just so much R&D that goes into these boats. There's the athletic side now. These boats are incredibly physical, more so than any other boat I've ever sailed. And I feel like with this new multi-hulls and the style of racing, it really does tick all the boxes. You still have the design element and the engineering like Formula One.
Yeah.
Yet you almost have an athletic level, like a game of rugby or rugby league. So I really think it does take the best of the best. And as you say, I mean, that's one of the coolest things about the America's Cup, and what makes it so hard to win is it's the coordination of, you know, over 100 people.
Yeah.
And to get that right and the motivation and to get it all coming together, it's an incredibly rewarding experience when you're able to pull it off.
It is an enormous team effort that goes into these cups, and years of a team effort. It's not just, you know, you put the team together at the last minute and off you go.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people say that the race is won, you know, really before you turn up. And I think in terms of preparation, that's how you have to approach it. Now, it is racing, so anything can happen. So it's never won until you cross that finish line, but it really is like most other sports, in that the better prepared you are, the more chance you've got of actually winning.
Now, you've been through the journey from the trimaran through to the development of the AC45s and now on to the 72s. How was the development phase of the 45s and then into the 72s, and what are the key differences that you notice between these boats and particularly the trimaran?
Well, the 45s have just been an awesome, training platform, but also racing platform for the AC World Series. The coolest thing about the 45s, and especially the wings, is it's the ultimate performance level. And I think most people that go through sailing and are used to trying to find boat speed, one of the biggest development areas is the mast and the mainsail. And the beauty of the wing is the AC45s, they're all exactly the same. So everyone has exactly the same boat. I mean, if it wasn't for the branding, there is no way you'd be able to tell the AC45s apart. So that's great for a World Series regatta, because it comes down to the sailors. And not only that, but the boats are powered up from 5 knots. You can fly a hull. And we've sailed the AC45s all the way up to 30 knots, big seas, very, very reliable. And the only damage they get is human error, basically. The 72 is really another animal. It's so physical, so powered up. And obviously now with the foiling, it just adds a whole other dimension. But again, I really think this is the way forward, because it's producing, it really requires the best of the best. You know, you can't just be a sort of specialist tactician and not fit, and vice versa. You can't sort of be the fittest guy in the world but not be able to anticipate or have a tactical mind of what's coming up. So it really is, and there's the risk versus reward. I mean, in past campaigns, besides, you know, obviously the trimaran one, there was no real risk. You know, you couldn't, those old version 5, but it's not like you're going to tip one over or you're doing 8 knots, so there's only a limit to what you can do. Now, there is serious risk versus reward. I mean, you tip one of these over and we've seen what happens. It can end your campaign if you're right before the race series.
Absolutely.
Let alone really hurt or kill someone. So you've got this mental game you've got to play with yourself and the rest of your teammates all, you know, the whole way you're out there sailing.
We did witness that dramatic crash of the USA 17. What was that like for you? I mean, what was going through your mind as that was unfolding?
Yeah, look, right when it was happening, the only thing I could think about was the guys on board, making sure we got a head count and that everyone was all right. And I don't know how, but somehow we got through it with zero injuries and were able to, find everyone. The next step was obviously trying to save the boat, given that how sort of gnarly the conditions were in the bay, but not only the bay, the big issue was getting sucked out offshore. But I guess the biggest thing was the amount we learned from that experience. From a sailing point of view, from, you know, reacting to adversity, to, I think the biggest lesson for the team is seeing your team and the people you've got in the team go through a tough situation. You know, how are they going to react? Is the team going to split apart and implode, or the team pull each other tighter, put their heads down and say, hey, we're going to get through this and we're going to be stronger? Well, for us, it was the latter. You You know, we've met the guys, dug it in over the winter. We've now got a better boat, a faster boat, it's safer. But more importantly, we've been pushed and tested harder than any other team out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think any other team will have to go through what we went through. And, you know, we're a stronger team.
Yeah, so. You're almost better prepared now in that position.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously not something I'd planned to do as part of the building the team structure.
No, obviously
but,
not.
You know, I mean, certainly there's no question in my mind that we're a stronger team, you know, after it. And, you know, the attitude, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I mean, it's definitely the case here.
Well, you've kind of faced the extreme adversity that you're going to face, and you've managed to get through that, and everybody was okay. And that was the most important thing. As you said, as a team, cohesively, you can move forward.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also, I mean, it's not just the sailors on board, but how the engineers, the boat builders, all the shore guys, they're the ones that are going to have to dig it in even harder now because of something like this. Now, how are they going to react? You know, how are they going to behave and how's that going to be viewed from the outside?
And certainly,
it's pretty daunting. Any other team seeing how our guys reacted, they reacted by putting their heads down, saying, hey, no problem, we'll get through this.
And incredible credit to your shore team because they miraculously got that boat back on the water in pretty good time, really.
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, these guys, you know, the fact is we do have, I think, the best in the world, you know, in our shore guys, the commitment, the attitude, the skill. If I look back at the World Series as to why we've been sort of so dominant there, I think a big part of it is no matter what happens in the World Series, if we capsize, if we had damage, those guys are the first guys in there and the last to leave. And they make sure we've got the tool ready to race to go out and do the job. And it's just that attitude that those guys want it even more than we do. And that's just, if there's, you know, I mean, if you're ever looking for motivation, and, you know, generally the guys involved in this game tend to be motivated anyway. But if you're ever looking for motivation, then, you know, you get it from those guys.
Yeah, certainly. You've got an amazing pool of talent supporting you underneath you and managing that boat. And as you said, they're part of that team and they want it as much as you do.
Yeah, it's a lot like, you know, sort of like touring cars or Formula One where it's the whole pit crew, you know. It's the designers, the engineers. It's, okay, you see the driver or the sailors up there with the champagne. But who are they going to celebrate with straight after? It's their team.
Exactly.
You know, the guys that have kept them out there. And that's one of the most important parts of this game.
You're listening to Sailing Chicks with Nicks on Radio Northern Beaches.
Tell them all the world can never get me off.
You're listening to Sailing Chicks with Nicks. It's our exclusive interview with Jimmy Spithill, skipper of Oracle Team USA. It's interesting that you bring it back to Formula One, because I think the way that the Cup has gone in the last few years is much more along that Formula One, particularly with the technology and the development continuously sort of going to new levels. Have you had the chance to meet any of the Formula One drivers in your Red Bull challenges?
Yeah, it was been quite cool. I've been able to catch up with Mark Webber and Lewis Hamilton. That was cool. And they're really good guys. You know, Mark Webber's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you the other thing that's important is, you know, you spend these huge amounts of money and you sacrifice your time and that. But I think one of the things on why Red Bull have been so successful, you know, the Red Bull Formula One team, is they make sure they have fun and have a good time.
Yeah.
And that is the key, because you do spend these big amounts of money and all this time. You think, well, geez, if I'm going to do that, I better make sure I have a good time.
Yeah.
And that's certainly, I think, one of the big things that's been noticed with the Red Bull Formula One team from all the others that have just as many resources, etc., and that they make sure it's fun and that you want to go get up and go and do it day in, day out.
Yeah, it's passionate about Red Bull's very passionate about those sorts of things, and they have a great vibe to all of their teams. What's it been like for you sailing in San Fran?
Awesome. I mean, anyone that's sailed in San Francisco Bay knows it's one of the best places to go sailing. I mean, it's got in the summer, it's so windy, reliable, big currents, you've got the fog, you've got, you know, some of the big iconic landmarks of Alcatraz and the Golden Gate Bridge, etc. Awesome. It's really, you know, it ticks all the boxes. And from a spectator point of view and a stadium, what we call stadium sailing,
yeah,
it's hard to beat. So, you know, I think this Cup will just be such a huge spectacle for spectators, whether you're watching it on TV or live.
Mm.
Everyone's going to be able to see it.
Are people really getting into it over there? There's always that big build-up in the sort of 6 months lead up to the Cup where the locals really start getting into it. Is that happening over there in San Fran? Is the vibes really building?
Yeah, it is. And I think a lot of it's come from having a couple of AC World Series events here in the 45s. I mean, it's the fact now that if you're walking around in your team jacket or clothing, people just come up and stop you on the street and have a chat and recognise you. The San Francisco people, they really get behind their home teams. So they've got a baseball team here called the Giants. You know, they've got a football team here called the 49ers. And they've really taken on, you know, our team as their home team. And that's sort of, it's sort of like, you know, playing a home game. You can't, that sort of energy you get, you know, from that crowd support and the people getting behind you, it's hard to put a number on it, but it makes such a big difference.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we've already seen it already, and we think it's going to be something that can help us, you know, help us get towards that winning, you know, that winning formula.
I think it's going to be, there's going to be a huge support for you over there. Now, recently we had the Youth America's Cup selection over there, and our Aussie boys headed over with Team Objective. We had the chance to chat to them last week on the show. How was it for you to be involved, and particularly as a lot of them see you as a mentor? It must have been great to see the next generation of sailors over there.
Oh, I mean, it's just great to have a pathway for the next generation. Mm. It's just been so frustrating when young sailors come up and say, oh, how do I get into the America's Cup? What do I do?
Mm.
Now we can finally say, here's your pathway. The Red Bull Youth America's Cup, multi-holes, AC45. Every other sport's got some sort of a pathway, and finally we've got it.
Yeah.
The cool thing about Objective Australia is that, you know, with Tony Walls and Trax Gordon, they really have, the cool thing I like about them is that they sort of talk less and they do more. You know, they're not out there fully promoting themselves. You look at the results that team has had over the last few years and the different projects they've been involved in. I mean, they just let the results do the talking.
Yeah.
And I think what they've done by almost taking away a lot of the politics that come with, you know, different federations in Australia, they've been able to just sort of cuddle the crap and get on with the, you know, letting the talent get out there and the training. And they're going to have a good shot at this Youth America's Cup.
Well, we're definitely supporting them. We hope that they go very well over there. And that's, of course, in between the end of the Louis Vuitton and lead into the America's Cup over there in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, imagine the Rugby World Cup, right? And just before the Rugby World Cup, in the same stadium, they had a Junior Rugby World Cup play just before.
Mm.
That's what it's going to be like for these sailors. They're going to be caught up in the hype. They're going to be on the exact same stadium as us. And it's going to be such an amazing experience for them to showcase the talent. And I can tell you, I mean, these guys are really good. And for the big cup team, where do you think they're going to look for the next people they want to hire? Already, we've been looking at a few guys from the outside as to we're targeting, you know, for a potential next campaign. So I think it's just a great next step for youth sales, and it gives them something to aim for and really sort of, you know, if they've got the dream of doing it, well, that's the way they get into it.
Such a great evolution for sailing and the development of these sailors.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was more in my situation. It was more just sort of being in the right place at the right time with Sid, you know, and having this incredible opportunity. And frankly, a lot of the federations and all these associations in Australia just really weren't that interested in trying to build something for it.
Yeah.
That's why I've been so impressed with what Tony's done and how he's gone about setting it up. Mm. He's just built some fantastic talent. I mean, Trax Gordon, who I worked with at a younger age, I think he's one of the best in Australia. And like I said, these guys let the results do the talking. A lot of people talk in Australia, but these are a couple of guys that get out there and get it done.
We are. We're really gunning for those guys over there with Team Objective. Now, keeping on the Australian thing, I should say, it's the 30th anniversary this year of Australia winning the America's Cup. Is that something that influenced you as you grew through your career?
Yeah, no question. I mean, my biggest hero in sailing was Colin Beachell. The fact I used to sort of work, he was a neighbour, and I used to work over at their boatyard as I was a young kid. But, yeah, he was the guy I looked up to for the heroics he sort of performed when he climbed the mast in one of the races. But the fact that he has no ego, he never promotes himself, he's very, you know, low-key.
Mm.
And I think he's the best sailor ever to come out of Australia. You look at his Olympic background, America's Cup. I mean, you'd never know it if you met the guy. He's such an understated guy. But, for me, he's the best sailor Australia ever produced.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're 30 years down the track. As you said before, there's a huge pool of talent from Australia already over there in San Francisco, and we've got the youth selection. Do you think it's looking promising for the future of Australia, particularly in the America's Cup?
I think so. I mean, look, there's no question. You look at the sailing, the build, the shore, engineering. It's all there. You look at a lot of the key roles in these campaigns, and there's a lot of Australians that seem to fill it. But one thing that goes with this game is you need to make sure you've got the right resources and that you've got adequate funding. Anyone knows what it's like to try and do a campaign without, you know, enough resources. And frankly, even if you've got all the resources, it still never guarantees you the result. It's still hard enough. So, you know, I would love to see an Australian team come together in the future. I think the groundwork that's been laid by Objective Australia will be a huge step. And, yeah, look, I really think with the new format and the fact that this is now something non-sailors can watch on TV, it doesn't go on for hours on end. There's some real crash and burn and some risk, short races, etc. Now I think we've got something that can work on TV, where in the past, with the old boats, it was just never going to work on mainstream TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is such an action-packed format when you watch it on TV. It's so spectator-friendly. Anyone can get engaged in this event.
Yeah, well, in the States, for instance, one of the biggest sports at the moment over here is NASCAR.
Yeah. You
know? And people, a lot of this NASCAR audience are coming over to check this out and really enjoying it. And they're sort of calling it a NASCAR on water. And it's classic. You just wouldn't think that NASCAR fans would be into it. But it's because of this format now, because of the risk versus reward, people can understand the athletic side. It's a lot more educational now with the high definition and they superimpose the graphics on a high definition picture. So it's just like anything, you know. I think once people become educated with it and appreciate what's going on, then they naturally, you know, they really get excited about the sport. And one thing, we've done surveys here in San Francisco during these World Series events, and one of the coolest things was that more than 50% of the audience watching were non-sailors or kids. And I think if that's the case, then I think you know you're on the right track.
You ain't nothing but a troublemaker, girl.
You had me hooked again from the minute you sat down. The way you bite your lip got my head spinning around. After a drink or two, I was putty in your hands. I don't know if I'll have the strength to stand. Troublemaker, yeah, that's your middle name. Oh, I know you're no good, but you're stuck in my brain, and I wanna.
corners of my mind. I see a silhouette every time I close my eyes. There must be poison in those fingertips of yours, 'cause I keep coming back again for more. Oh, trouble, trouble, Mickey, yeah, that's your middle name. Oh, I know you're no good, but you're stuck in my brain. And I wanna know, why does it feel so good but hurt so bad?
You know just how to work that back and make me forget my name. What the hell you do, I won't remember. I'll be gone until November, and you show up again next summer, yeah. Typical middle name is Prada. Picture like a glove, girl, I'm sick of the drama. You're a troublemaker, but damn girl, it's like I love the trouble, and I can't even explain why.
Why does it feel so good but hurt so bad?
Whoa, whoa.
My mind keeps saying,
you're listening to Sailing Chicks with Nicks as I chat to Oracle Team USA skipper Jimmy Spithill. Now, Jimmy, just on a few personal notes, we're here based at Northern Beaches. You are a Northern Beaches boy, as you said. What are some of the fondest memories you have of this area?
Would it be wrong to say the Newport Arms?
No, I think that's what most sailors say when it comes to the beaches, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think it's a staple.
Growing up in Pittwater, it's just such a paradise. You know, it's not until you leave and you go around the world that you understand that you live in one of the best places in the world. I mean, the lifestyle, the beaches, Pittwater, the harbour. I mean, and just the fact, I think, that the way people are down to earth and enjoy, you know, at the end of the day, people enjoy having fun, having a good time.
Yeah, it's the mentality as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, and an attitude and that approach. And I tell you what, I certainly miss it, and I guess I really respect and appreciate it, I guess, when I come home, because we're so fortunate to have come from there and to everyone that's still there. People, anyone that doesn't travel outside the Northern Beaches, they're very, very fortunate. It really is a little paradise.
There's a reason why we stay on the beaches.
That's right.
It's a reason why we don't go across bridges.
It's almost like an intelligence test, you know, that if you leave, there must be something wrong with it.
It is. It's exactly like that. You actually just touched on the fact that Australians are very driven people. Do you see that resonating through the Australians you meet overseas and you work with overseas?
Yeah, I think so. And certainly without, I hate giving Kiwis a rap, but, you know, probably with New Zealanders as well, in that the fact that you are probably, you know, quite independent and far away, it forces you to get out there and take stuff on. And I think it doesn't really matter what the field is, but certainly as a nation, I think, we sort of have, as a culture, you know, we are independent and we're not afraid of the challenge.
Now, who have been your greatest inspirations? You're an inspiration to a lot of people, but overall, who's inspired you the most?
In sailing, I have to say, you know, Colin Beachill, Rob Brown as well, who was a neighbour and a big influence. And, you know, I remember watching the Adequate Skips a lot on TV. And then probably outside of sailing, I've really had a big respect for people that are good at not just one thing. So this new term they use is this waterman phrase, where guys like Laird Hamilton and that were very good at a lot of water sports, not just surfing, but windsurfing, kiteboarding, not just specialising in one thing. And that's this sort of all-round kind of athlete. That's something that I really respect and you know, look to a lot of those guys who really push the limits there and are able to be quite competitive and in a whole lot of different disciplines, you know, of water sports.
Mm. And yeah, you're very into a lot of water sports. We've seen you photos of you out there paddleboarding in San Francisco. Then, of course, you're sailing, probably surfing, windsurfing, doing a bit of flying. What else do you like to do in your spare time when you're not on the water or in the air?
Look, I just love doing anything competitive. You know, I just cannot help myself. There's bets here all day in the office, out of the office. It never stops here, especially with the Kiwi guys, even if they don't pay their debts. But no, look, I just love the competition. I love sport. I've taken a lot of money off Tom Slingsby lately, you know, just some basketball free throws. Between, I think I've got a mental edge over him now. But no, look, it's all fun. I mean, I just love the, you know, I love being busy and, you know, just getting out there and doing an activity.
And you have a huge amount of energy, Jimmy, and you're an amazing inspiration to a lot of Australians here. We are so proud that you're out there and you're doing it for Australia as well as obviously for Oracle. And
thanks, Nick. You know, it's certainly, you know, you kind of, when you do these challenges, you obviously, you're doing it for yourself and your family and that, but certainly, you know, I'm so proud of, you know, being Australian and where I'm from and what it stands for and kind of like those, you know, values we spoke about earlier, you know, where we come from and that sort of. You know, the thing I love about being Australian is that you're never down. You know, it doesn't matter how big the hill, to climb is. You know, you never count an Aussie out.
No.
And, you know, I think that's one of the key things that's helped me, you know, through some real tough moments.
We get a lot of people that come through this show, and the number of people that look to you for inspiration is quite amazing. So you're definitely inspiring a lot of young sailors out there. So it's very good to see that the next generation is looking up to you and following your steps or trying to. They're big shoes to fill.
Maybe we should get them some professional help.
Yeah, maybe. Now, a few other things. Do you ever get nervous going into any of the sailing events?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't think it's a bad nervous. It's more of an excitement.
Excited energy.
Yeah, it really is excitement. I mean, it's when you're in that match point race, or it comes down to the Super Sunday now, as we call it, in the AC World Series, and it's the one race, the winner takes all. It's just an amazing feeling, you know, when you're just that start gun's about to go, and, you know, you've got all the pressure and it's running. I mean, when that adrenaline's going through your body, that's why you do it. And at the time, obviously, you can feel like you're pushing yourself, but I think that's what it's all about, you know, this sport is getting out there and testing yourself and, you know, and how probably one of the biggest things, kind of like the capsize and a few other things that's happened in the past is, well, how you deal through the tough moments, you know?
Yeah.
That's where you learn a lot about yourself and also your teammates.
It's definitely where your biggest strengths tend to come from.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's just culturally, you know, you look at, you know, like we were talking earlier, that you never count, you know, if an Australian's an underdog, you better be careful. You just never, ever give up. And I think that's sort of bred into us at a young age growing up in Australia.
Absolutely. It's kind of the Australian way of life, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, the other cool thing about Australia is that there is so many sports. You know, there is that variety and choice at a young age. You know, we have such a fantastic, I guess, environment that, you know, there are so many options when you're a kid of what you want to do. What you can do if you want to get into sport or just do it for fun. But we're pretty fortunate in that regard.
We certainly are. We are a country that prides ourselves on being built on sport. And obviously sport, I'm sure you've been following the news a little bit, has been a little bit tainted and shaken up here recently. What's your opinion on that?
That's a real shame. You know, I've seen that.
Yeah.
The big thing over here has obviously been with Lance Armstrong. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame because I remember as a kid that no matter what was going on in the world, and you know, I sort of joke about it, the reason I got involved in boxing was because I had red hair. The fact is, the thing I used to love about sport growing up was, whether the bell sounds or the start gun goes, at that very time, it doesn't matter what your past is, it doesn't matter what you look like, what your hair colour, whether your parents are rich or poor or whatever, everyone's equal, you know?
Yeah,
and
it's
that's
inequality.
What I used to love about sport is that once that gun or bell sounded, well, it came down to the person that had either worked the hardest or wanted it more than the other guy. And that's why, and that's so, if, for me, you're not really playing sport if you're cheating or if you're fixing the result. It's not sport then, you know, then it goes back into sort of politics and, you know, stuff that, you know, I thought the whole reason sport was there for.
So,
it's a shame to see that. But, hey, look, we're just, you know, I guess people are looking for anything they can nowadays. But for me, you're not a real champion if that's what it takes.
Listening to Sailing Chicks with Nicks on Radio Northern Beaches as I chat to Jimmy Spithill, skipper of Oracle Team USA. Jimmy, a couple of things people may not know about you. Favourite movie?
Forrest Gump.
Favourite flavoured chips?
Salt and vinegar.
Good choice. Fave TV show?
Ooh. Well, was The Sopranos, now it's Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, good choice. The song you can't resist singing to in the car?
Oh, there's too many, but anything AC/DC.
Caramello Koalas or Freddo Frogs?
Freddo.
Tui's or VB?
Oh, please, VB.
Favourite home-cooked meal?
Mum's roast.
And what would you do if you weren't a sailor?
Oh, that'd be scary. I think I'd do anything involved in the team. The only regret I have in life is that I always had a... through my father and a couple of, you know, friends of his and that was I'm really interested in the special forces and what they call the Navy SEALs over here. So if I'd go again, I'd try out for that.
Oh, well, we're glad you're where you are because you're an amazing, inspirational sailor. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Can't thank you enough, Jimmy. Get back out there. Sail that AC-72.
Hey, thanks a lot, Nick, and look forward to
hopefully
doing it again.
One day while the light is glowing, I'll be in my castle golden. But until the gates are open, I just wanna feel this moment.
And that was our interview with Jimmy Spithill, the skipper of Oracle Team USA. We'd like to thank him so much for joining us on the show. Next week, we'll be back live in the studio.
I just wanna
Hi, this is Jimmy Spithill from Oracle Team USA, and you're listening to Sailing Chicks with Nick.
Reporting live from the tallest building in Tokyo. Long way from them hallways. It was O's and oh yeas. They counting always. Real fat all day. Now baby we can parlay. Oh baby we can party. She read books, especially about red rooms and tie-ups. I got her hooked, cause she see me in a suit with a red tie tied up. Rita Gris, nice to meet you. But time is money. Only difference is I own it. Now let's stop time and enjoy this moment.
One day.